Let me bring back a conversation I had a while back with Glenn Frankel, who really had some tremendous insights to share with regards to diversity. I'm going to bring this to you now. And on June 1st, on Hour 2, I'm going to bring back to you a conversation that I had with Dr. Stephen Stosny, who spoke with us about race relations. But for now, Glenn Frankel on diversity from the movie High Noon. Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr., where you are truly in for a treat. We have an outstanding author, Mr. Glenn Frankel, who has written a book, a bestseller, about something that a lot of you can really get into. As a matter of fact, think about one of your favorite westerns, Gunsmoke, High Chaparral, one of your favorite westerns. And try to put yourself back in that time as you get ready to hear about High Noon. That's the title of the book by Mr. Glenn Frankel. It is called High Noon, but it may not really have you back in the Western days, as I just said. Mr. Glenn Frankel, hello, sir, and how are you doing?
I'm fine, Carl. It's great to be on.
I tell you what, great to have you on, too. I was messing with them as I encouraged them to take themselves back into the days when they used to watch their westerns, because, of course, we hear the title High Noon, and that's the first thing that would come to someone's mind, but that may not be the right place for them to go this time, huh?
Well, it's a little bit of both. The subtitle, as you know, is The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of an American Classic. And so what I've tried to do here is take a moment in American history, the late 40s and early 1950s, which was the time of the so-called Red Scare, and the time in which High Noon was written originally and then filmed, and combine it with the making of the movie itself, which is a really interesting story. So I've got a great Hollywood movie, and one that I grew up with as a little boy, but also with a very interesting, I would say, toxic and difficult moment in American history, and kind of braided the two together, because they do fit together, as I think we'll explain shortly. And so you get it's Hollywood and history combined, and I've loved working on it, and I hope people will love to read it.
You've definitely done an outstanding job with it, and you picked such a good one to go with. We're talking about a program, a show, a movie that was one of the best loved in America, a very, very beautiful theme song, which we will be hearing. But you're also talking about some Academy Awards here.
Yes, that's right. I mean, and it's interesting, too, because this wasn't supposed to be a great movie. It came from a little independent production company headed by Stanley Kramer, and they owed one more movie on an old contract, and so they decided to make this little Western. It was in black and white. There's no great landscapes and beautiful Western scenery in it. There are no cattle drives, you know. It's a small movie on a tight budget, and yet so many things about it just click so well. Wonderful acting, a great, really suspenseful script. As you point out, the theme song, which is quite poignant and beautiful, and some great directing. It's got a beautiful sort of documentary, gritty feel to it. All those things came together to make it an immediate hit. It did really well when it came out, but the amazing thing is, here we are, 65 years later, and people still know High Noon. They know what it means. They've seen the movie. They know about it. It's one of those rare movies that's endured all this test of time.
And that's a great way to put it, too. It has endured the test of time. It's so interesting that you have so many songs that seem to stand the test of time. And you play it today, and it sounds about as fresh as it did when it was first released, even if that was 30 years ago. And here you have this movie, High Noon, and some of the emotion that it can still evoke for people who have watched it in the past. Like you said, you grew up on that as a little boy. You watched it. Many of us watched that as children. And I wouldn't be surprised if many who are listening now have watched that movie several times. And in fact, even lately. Glenn, I got to ask you, what got you into writing?
Oh, well, I always wanted to be a writer. I grew up in Rochester, New York, and I liked stories, and you know, I watched a lot of television. I think my parents wanted me to be a lawyer, but that's because they watched a good lawyer show on TV and thought, you know, oh, that sounds interesting, and he can right wrongs that way. But I always was interested in writing. I didn't major in English, but I studied history in college, and I just knew that's what I wanted to do. I wrote poetry. I wrote short stories. I ended up getting into journalism around the time of the Watergate affair in 1973. It occurred to me that if I was going to actually be a writer, somebody had better pay me. You know, I got to make a living.
Yes, sir.
I was driving a school bus, actually, and trying to write in the middle of the day between bus routes, and it wasn't working, Carl. The novel wasn't coming out, you know, so I made a good move. I went into journalism. I got paid next to nothing. The first job I had was outside of Richmond, Virginia, and I got paid $1.65 an hour.
Wow.
But the great thing was that almost from the minute I started, I knew I could learn to do that. That would work for me somehow. The writing, the reporting, the going out and talking to folks. So I just kind of fell into journalism, and you know, but always wanted to write books, and wrote a few in my spare time based on some of the things I'd covered. I was lucky enough to work for the Washington Post for many years, and a few books flowed out of that, but it was all about writing and trying to get better at it. Writing is something you work at all your life. I still feel like I've got a long way to go before I write the way I really want to. So it's always challenging, and you know, I was very blessed to be able to have the kind of career I've had.
And I got to take my hat off to you, ladies and gentlemen. Professor Glenn Frankel has also been serving as professor at several schools. He is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. And Professor Frankel, this is something that really stands out to me, the fact that your Pulitzer Prize in 89 had to do with your reporting that was considered to be balanced. And that is something that so many people long for today. You had writing, you had reporting that was considered to be balanced.
Well, it was a tough subject, too, because I was the Washington Post Jerusalem bureau chief, and it was the time of the first Palestinian uprising. And that really tested me in every possible way, because you've got two different narratives in Israel and Palestine, you know, two different national movements, and they're in conflict. And to be even-handed and to capture the human stories on both sides, because they're fabulous stories of amazing people, and to do it in a way that is, I don't know, even-handed, fair to everyone, that was the challenge, and it still is. And I don't pretend I did it perfectly, but I was honored for it, and I'm very, very proud of that. I've tried to do that in all my writing, Carl. I mean, I'm not interested in heroes and villains very much. I'm interested in real people who face terrible dilemmas, you know, who have to decide what to do in moments of crisis, whether it's in a war or whether it's in a terrible political situation, like some of my characters face in the High Noon book. I feel it's a great honor to meet those people and to talk to them, and what I owe them is a fair account, you know, my best effort to be fair to everyone. And it's not easy to do, but I'm that's what journalists are supposed to do, and I believe in journalism. Even in this era where journalists sometimes are labeled, I believe by our president most lately, an enemy of the people, I don't believe that. I believe that our job is to find out the truth, hold people in power accountable, and be as fair to everyone as we can be.
And that is one of the reasons that I really wanted to point out to everyone in the Speaking With community that this issue of integrity means something to you, so that they'll understand that the book High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of an American Classic, is something that is truly, truly a book worth reading. You mentioned that because there's no question in my mind that some of those qualities that brought you this award, this Pulitzer Prize award, for having written, reported in a way that was considered balanced and sensitive, and like you're saying, that really gets to the truth of what was happening, is what people are still looking for, even in a time when so much seems to be jaded, and it's harder and harder and harder for people to buy into the notion that we're getting real information, or as you said, our president would say, real news as opposed to fake news. This book you've written, High Noon, if you would share with us some of these connections, why it became a favorite film of some of our presidents, including as recently as Bill Clinton, and some of what was going on with regards to the Red Scare campaign that you touched on, so that we can begin to get into the book High Noon, begin to get a feel for what that book is really about.
Well, the political era we're talking about is the late 1940s and early 1950s. You know, we've won World War II. The New Deal is finally, you know, we've beaten the Great Depression. But, you know, a lot of people felt left out of those triumphs. A lot of people, you know, the Democrats dominated under a great charismatic president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But he had died toward the end of the war. We won the war, and yet soon there was a really brutal Cold War that took hold between the United States and the Soviet Union. And if you recall, we had the atomic bomb, and the Soviet Union was racing to get their version of it. So it really was a time of high anxiety in our society and sort of disappointment among many people that the war hadn't ended in a way that left us, you know, triumphant. And so we had something of a political backlash movement in the country, people blaming other people, people looking for easy explanations of what had gone wrong. You know, stop me if it reminds you of the time we're in now.
Thank you,
but
sir.
We'll get to that. Anyway, and the House Un-American Activities Committee begins to hold hearings into communist infiltration of the government, of schools, and then inevitably they go to Hollywood, because Hollywood's a great place if you want to hold committee hearings and you want to get publicity. Around this time, you know, Hollywood is in the post-war era is also struggling a bit economically. You know, the movies used to be 100 million people a week used to go to the movies, but that was beginning to be reduced. The economics were different. The congressmen come out there to investigate, and they're looking for communism. They're looking for outsiders. The sense that these people have taken over our popular culture and are feeding us the communist line. You know, there's a lot of fantasy there, but nonetheless, they had a lot of power. High Noon comes in this way. The screenwriter who did it is a guy named Carl Foreman, and he had been in the American Communist Party for a brief period before World War II. But nobody paid much attention to him afterwards, as he was pretty small fish. But by 1951, when the committee comes back for a second set of hearings, Carl has been very successful. He's in a little film company. He's been nominated twice for an Academy Award, and soon will be for a third one. He's got a name now, and he's becoming important. And so sure enough, they subpoena him, as they did hundreds of other people. And they want him to testify about communist influence. They want him to, and they want him to name names, cooperate with them, and to tell them who else was in the party. And this is a real crisis for him, because on the one hand, he's got this great golden career that's just beginning to take off, and he's not in the party anymore, but he doesn't feel he can rat out people he knew and the friends he had. It doesn't feel right to him. So he, you know, faces a terrible dilemma, and inevitably, his dilemma starts working its way into the script he's writing. If you recall High Noon, it's about a lawman, you know, who's in a small town and who finds out that the villain, the evil person he put in jail, has gotten out and is coming back to town with three gunmen to kill him. And he goes around door to door, literally in the town, trying to round up friends and supporters to stand up to these guys. Because if he can get the whole town to support him, these four guys won't have a chance. And to his great surprise, he finds that people are not interested in helping him. Either out of cowardice or a sort of sense of corruption, they back off, they lock their doors, they shut him down, and he has to face these four gunmen alone. And Carl found himself in a similar predicament. His friends were not exactly supportive. The film company and his business partners were wondering, well, what are you going to say on the stand? And if you don't cooperate with them, they're going to blacklist you and they're going to come after us as well because we're your friends and your partners. So this thing, so High Noon is not only a terrific Western film that has stood the test of time, it also comes out of a political context of the difficult times it was made in. And that's the heart of what my book's about. Carl, the mix between the politics and the making of this wonderful movie.
And it's so interesting that you mentioned that part of this had to do with the political right making this push, and partly in response to this lack of fulfillment that the nation was experiencing even after this victorious war, but so much that left us unfulfilled. The Red Scare came about, and one of the things that you mentioned is that there was a role that even though they did not agree with what was happening on the right, the left actually ended up contributing a bit to the Red Scare hysteria.
Well, yes, that's true. I mean, one of the things you learn when you study something like this is how fragile our democracy and our democratic institutions can be. A lot of them really failed to stand up to this. First of all, you have the Congress, this committee doing investigations and almost, you know, criminal type investigations, which is not a power they're supposed to have. I mean, they're not the cops, they're not the prosecutors. You have the court system, which didn't really stand up to the committee for many years, didn't intervene, even though cases were brought before it. You have the political parties. The Republicans are, you know, taken by this thing, and the Democrats aren't really able to withstand it and don't know how to react to it. And I have to say, the press, the journalists, my cohort, didn't really stand up to it either, didn't really hold people in power accountable the way they're supposed to. So it's a breakdown on many levels, and as you point out, political liberals who were opposed to the committee eventually ended up cooperating with the blacklist and the purge of people. A lot of people lost their jobs without any, you know, due process of law because of their political beliefs and because they were sort of political dissidents. And that's not really the way things are supposed to work in America. But that's what happened, and it's worth studying both as a warning to us today, I think, but just as a fascinating moment in history that we need to understand if we're going to understand what democracy really is and how we need to defend it.
Professor Frankel, you mentioned in your book, too, that it wasn't just the politicians who were taking an active role in stirring up this hysteria, but even a great who's been beloved by so many in the Western. You know, I talked about Gunsmoke and High Chaparral, and neither of those really get to what we're talking about. So I kind of took people down the wrong path there deliberately. But thinking about one of the heroes of the Western film, John Wayne, and you indicate that he actually played an active role in helping to stir up the hysteria.
Well, yes, he did, and he's one of my heroes, too, on film. I mean, The Searchers is a book, is a movie that I wrote about in my previous book, and I think Wayne is a fascinating performer and an interesting figure in American history, but at this point, you know, he's the head of the Motion Picture Alliance for the Preservation of American Values, a very right-wing group that used anti-communism and the Red Scare to really gain power in Hollywood. Wayne does this out of, I think, a true belief. He's an American patriot, but he's not much of an American Democrat, let's say, at this point. And he tries to get Carl Foreman, the screenwriter, to cooperate with the committee. He does believe in redemption, you might say, Carl. He tries, he makes it. But when Foreman refuses to cooperate with the committee, Wayne helps blacklist him and gets him thrown out of Hollywood, and Carl Foreman ends up moving to London and working under a pseudonym because he can't work, he can't have a job because of his political beliefs. And yes, Wayne played a role in this, not a good role, and it's fascinating to see him in contrast to Gary Cooper, who also was a conservative Republican like Wayne and who is the star of High Noon. The difference is that Cooper, I think, was a bit less ideological. he got to know Carl Foreman when they worked on the movie together. He had respect for Carl as a writer and as a filmmaker. And, you know, he felt intuitively that Carl was a trustworthy person, and so Cooper tries to support him. And even agrees to work on a small company. When Carl is blacklisted and can no longer work for his old company, he tries to form a new one, and Cooper tries to help him. But the pressure of John Wayne and Hedda Hopper, the gossip columnist, and other people on the right wing, the pressure they put on Cooper forces him to back down. So Wayne wins and Cooper loses, but really in some ways our democracy loses.
And as has been said, as we read your book, Mr. Wayne, John Wayne, said that he never regretted having helped Lon Foreman out of the country, not just out of the film industry here, but out of the country. That talks about passion. And you see, as you alluded a little earlier, some connection between what was happening then and what we have happening in our country now.
Yeah, I think we're in another dangerous period where we really have to think about what our democracy is and how to talk to each other. I mean, the blacklist era was a time of vicious rhetoric and terrible allegations and a search for outsiders who you could blame for your problems. Back then it was communists and Jews to an extent and liberals who were demonized. These days it's Muslims and it's refugees and it's other people. And I mean, it seems like a dangerous road and something we need to learn from and be very careful with, because there's a lot at stake here.
Professor Glenn Franco, I thank you so much for speaking with me. Would you please let people know how they can get the book High Noon?
Well, you can find it on Amazon.com and the Barnes & Noble website, so you can get it online fairly easily. You can also go to your local bookstore, whether it's a Barnes & Noble or an independent bookstore. They have it or they'll order it. You can get it. It's just published today. This is the official date, so it should be in a lot of stores or else they can get it for you very quickly. And, I'd be thrilled if people read it and then got back to me with their thoughts. I've got a website, and they're welcome to contact me.
Please, give them your website. Web address.
Well, it's Glenn Frankel, one word, Glenn, G-L-E-N-N, Frankel, FRANKEL.com. There's a place there to send me emails. That website also appears on the book jacket. And I'd love to hear people's reactions, because I think this is a conversation we all need to have. And I really hope people enjoy the book, because I think it's fun to read about Hollywood and the making of a great movie. But I also hope that the political message will come across as well.
Thank you so much for this mission. It is a very, very timely release of a great book. Again, everyone, High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of an American Classic by Glenn Franco. Remember his website, www.glennfranco.com. Thank you again so much for speaking with me about this.
Well, Carl, thank you so much for having me on. This has been really fun to talk to you. I appreciate it.
Quite welcome, sir. I'll be right back, everyone.